Pleasure to be with you today, and appreciate the opportunity to be your speaker this morning. And the topic is about a character in the Bible that I have a great deal of respect for, as I'm sure you probably do too, because his life was very interesting, very challenging. As a matter of fact, he faced struggles and temptations and cruelty and abandonment that I think any of us would struggle to face. And yet, like Job, he lived a life that was honorable and indeed had great impact on other people. A lot of times when we think about character, we tend to think about the things you don't do, the things you avoid doing, the list of don'ts. However, if we simply reduce it to that, we leave out the do's. And that the interesting thing about Joseph is he found the right balance between those. He didn't live his life in isolation. He wasn't simply focused on playing defense, but rather he used the skills that he had developed over his life to effectively leverage those capabilities into offense. And I think we can learn some great lessons out of that. And you know, I was also thinking about how, the Old Testament moves into the New Testament, and there's really this sort of design of maturity that God has intended. And if you think about the same thing growing up, I mean, a lot of the focus is on the things you don't do. Don't do this, stay away from that. Put that down. Don't touch that. And as you get older, you got to do some stuff. It can't just be about what we don't do. And so I think the Lord is amazingly effective in showing us a pattern of moving from what we don't do to the things that we need to have the courage to do. So the story of Joseph takes up about 13 chapters in the Bible. About 12 of them deal with Joseph while he's in Egypt. Probably one of the reasons that that is, the real story of Joseph is, how does he live his life out in a faithless place? It's a place where he's an alien. His faith is not practiced by other people. Why is that important? Well, I think we can think of a lot of reasons why, but certainly more and more, even in our country, there is in many ways a departure in the workplace, in school, and other places for some of the sort of structural character boundaries that we perhaps, many of us have grown up with, don't much exist anymore. I think we'd all agree that often a person's convictions, though, can get changed by context. I think we'd all agree that even the most stalwart of us can be challenged when we're placed in a difficult or unfriendly place. For example, how much is 2 plus 2? Well, the answer to that may vary somewhat depending on where you ask it. Shouldn't, but it might. In an accountant's office, the answer is 4. In a hospital, it might be between 3 and 5. In the lawyer's office, after the door is shut, it might be, how much do you want it to be? Context can impact convictions. especially in places where values are not valued as much. Might the greatest crisis facing our country today be something that often isn't talked about that much? Maybe it's not the situation with energy or the climate or jobs or clean air or bandwidth. The greatest crisis might well be the shortage of character. We should strive to learn more about and admire to an even greater degree what biblical character looks like. Joseph was a biblical character who had a lot of biblical character. And real character is always tested by crisis. Joseph has been betrayed by his brothers. His brothers are angry at him at first because he's daddy's favorite. They're also angry at him because they believe he sort of threw them under the bus by giving a bad report about their work ethic. And most of all, they were angry about his dreams. Because in their culture at that time, God speaks a lot of times through dreams. And dreams about the younger brother Joseph ruling over them. Well, that dream was a nightmare for his brothers. So they figure they better just snuff out the dream. So they kidnap Joseph, they sell him as a slave, and the Bible says in chapter 39, verse 1, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. So now the test is set. We know that Joseph has character when he's in Canaan. But is he going to have character in Egypt? We can be confident that God will be faithful to Joseph when he's in Egypt. But will Joseph be faithful to God in Egypt? In Egypt, Joseph is going to face a new set of circumstances. New context, different standards, different values. In Egypt, he's going to have a new language, a new status. He'll be exposed to a completely different set of religious orientations. You know, it's applicable for us in life as we move from situation to situation. Maybe it's leaving home to go to college, or maybe it's taking on a new job. Joseph was willing to adapt, but he maintained the same values. Throughout the first 17 years of Joseph's life, there's been one way to worship, one way to honor God, to obey him, one way to view God's authority and his sovereignty. Joseph grew up hearing about his great granddaddy, Abraham. He'd heard story after story. He'd been told often about the God of Abraham, Yahweh, they called him. And they only worshiped him, period. Now, Joseph finds himself in a culture where there are a lot of gods to be worshiped. And that's normal. And nobody worships just one God, especially not a God that doesn't have an idol or a statue to bow down to. And everybody in Egypt was expected to worship Pharaoh. Joseph is in a completely different religious context. But a person of character doesn't allow a changing environment to change commitments. In fact, change would manifest or highlight those values that don't change. Circumstances do not make you who you are. Circumstances have a way of revealing who you really are. And who you are today doesn't have to be the who you are forever. The metaphor that Jesus uses, that is building on a rock instead of sand because a storm's coming. He's not just talking about obeying the gospel or being baptized. He's talking about building and exercising spiritual muscles that are supported by him and his truth. It's building on the rock day by day, sort of like Nehemiah rebuilding the wall brick by brick. the opportunity to strengthen our character, to prepare for the times when it will be tested. In shipbuilding, there's a test that needs to happen. When a ship is completed, the next step for the ship is to be tested out in open waters. It's called a sea trial. They want to know if the vessel is seaworthy. They don't just keep the ship parked in dry land and spray water on it. But instead, they take the ship out so that it's got to face the wind and withstand the waves. The vessel, if it takes on water, it's not seaworthy. Most often because it lacks some kind of structural integrity. The ocean didn't cause there to be a breach in integrity. The ocean just revealed it. The test revealed the breach. God uses crisis or challenging times or difficult circumstances in my life and in yours for the same reason. First Chronicles. I know also, my God, that you test the heart and have pleasure in uprightness. Uprightness. A lot of translations use the word integrity there. God takes pleasure in integrity. And don't we as parents as well? When kids live out the lessons that they have been taught, that's pleasing. Some fail, some pass. The key word is uprightness or integrity. The dictionary says the quality or the state of being complete. In math, you've heard of an integer. It's a whole number. Comes from the same root word, integrity. Integrated. It's complete. A person of integrity is a whole person. A person of integrity doesn't live out a fractioned life. They're integrated. They're not one person here and another person over there. James warns of the danger of being double-minded and unstable, James 1 and 8. Not consistent, not faithful in all of the situations, double-mindedness. People of integrity don't compartmentalize life into sacred and secular. You get the same person, no matter the context. I know that we all value that and we desire that. I also think we would all agree it's a high calling. It's a challenge to be a person of integrity all of the time in all situations. It takes diligence and courage and commitment, wisdom, creativity. Interesting that one of the many times the enemies of Jesus tried to trick him or catch him in a trap or some kind of lie or, you know, catch him teaching false doctrine. They put him in a situation where they knew he wouldn't try to weasel out of it. To be somebody different. They began by pointing out how consistent he was. In Mark 12, they try to trap Jesus on the consistency of his life. When they had come, they said to him, "Teacher, we know that you are true and care about no one. For you do not regard the person of men, but teach the way of God in truth." One translation says, "Teacher, we know you're a man of integrity." And I don't think they were just blowing smoke. I think they were saying, okay, we'll grant you this. We watched. You're the same person all of the time. We know you're a man of integrity. You aren't swayed by people because you pay attention to who they are. But you teach the way of God in accordance to the truth. Consistency in self. On that basis, they tried to give him a question that no matter how he answered it, he'd be in trouble. They tried to trap Jesus using the consistency of his life as a mechanism against him. Changing. So here's the question. If somebody wanted to test you, could they use your reputation for consistency and integrity as part of their plan? Kind of makes you want to think a little, doesn't it? Changing circumstances don't change people of integrity. Proverbs 10 and 9, he who walks with integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will become known. What's he saying? People of integrity walk with confidence. They aren't looking over their shoulder, afraid that you're going to find out the truth about them, that they aren't really who they profess to be. It's not a worried existence. This is one of the gifts, I think, that God gives us, and a lot of times I think we discount it. That when we follow his ways, we can walk securely. It's how he removes fear from our lives. The Bible says the person who does not have integrity has a good reason to be concerned. They will be exposed. The Joseph of Canaan is going to be the same man as Joseph of Egypt. Whether he's in the public eye or behind closed doors. A couple of examples. Joseph has integrity in the workplace. It's kind of small. Now Joseph has been taken to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him from the Ishmaelites, who had him taken down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. He was in the house of the master of his master, the Egyptian. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of the house, and all that he had he put under his authority. So it was, from the time that he had made him overseer of the house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Slavery, the workplace in this case, did not cause Joseph to give in to the seduction of mediocrity. Joseph didn't have the attitude of, well, they can make me work, but they're just going to get minimum effort. People who have integrity work as though they own the place. And you know what? Oftentimes, they end up owning the place. Either literally or figuratively. Joseph didn't own where he was working, but he owned it. Potiphar must have thought to himself, Joseph cares about as much about the success of this household as I do, so I can trust him with it. And a blessing came about as a result of that. People of integrity work hard, and they work well. They're industrious, and they bless other people. The reason? Ultimately, Joseph wasn't working to serve Potiphar. He was serving God. And that's not something you do half-heartedly. That's the basis of any view that the Bible offers of work. For example, in Colossians 3, whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. So Joseph is going to go, he goes to work for Potiphar with just as much diligence just as much effort as he had when he was working for his dad. Can you imagine Paul, who used to supplement his income making tents? Making and selling tents that leaked or would rip? Or later, if you had a problem with one of them and brought it back to him, he'd say, hey, you touched it, you bought it. Or Jesus, 33 years on earth. During that time, he was a business person, a carpenter, many more years than he was a preacher. Can you imagine anybody in Nazareth talking about the job that Jesus had completed for them? Yeah, he's a nice guy, good prices. You really got to stay on him, though, to get the job done, to get him to show up on time. He tends to cut corners. We had to have him redo a bunch of cabinets because the doors just didn't even line up. Can you even imagine that? Rather, the Bible says Jesus had a stellar reputation in his hometown as he was growing up and working as a carpenter. In the workplace, if you follow God and his son Jesus, your work ethic should never be questioned, and your values shouldn't be compromised. When we do that, this passage teaches us that God's blessing flows through us. It blesses us and the people who are around us. God is good, and when we have integrity in a commitment to the right kind of ethic, his ethic, we make God look good in the workplace. When we have integrity, when our lives are integrated, the context doesn't change our character. Joseph had integrity in the workplace and in the bedroom. Chapter 39, verse 6. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came to pass that after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. And so it was, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of the house and spoke to them, saying, see, he has brought in to us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in with me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened, when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. So she kept his garment with her until his master came home. Then she spoke to him with words like these, saying, the Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came in to me to mock me. So it happened, as I lifted up my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled outside. So it was, when his master heard these words which his wife had spoken to him, saying, your servant did to me after this manner, his anger was aroused. Then Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. So Joseph's a good-looking guy. I think three people in the Old Testament are described as handsome: Joseph, David, and Absalom. One of the reasons that description is included, I think, is God wants us to know Joseph's a guy. He has the same attractions and desires as any young 20-something-year-old man would have. and Mrs. Potiphar. We have an example. The Bible affirms equality. Women can get just as far off the rails as men. We all need to be saved from sin. Joseph's had some reasons to say yes to this lady. Nobody would know. But also, Mrs. Potiphar could probably help him out a lot, you know, make it easier on him. Joseph could reclaim the position as the favored one. He could kind of get his old life back. Not only that, if you're in Joseph's position, you could be a little bitter at God. I mean, after all, there's a temptation to think, I know what the moral code was back in Canaan. You know, but if God really cared about me, he wouldn't have me here in Egypt. And besides, what's the saying? What happens in Egypt stays in Egypt. You don't have to work hard to rationalize character loss. Satan assures it. He's always helping us find a reason to compromise. And it's easy. But Joseph was convicted. He was sure of some reasons that he needed to say no. Number one, he didn't want to violate the trust that had been placed in him by his boss. Not only in his work habits, but his interpersonal dealings as well. He knew that it was more than just a violation of work rules to have an affair with Mrs. Potiphar. And it went way beyond just a write-up in the HR file. Number two, even more importantly, Joseph was convicted of his responsibility to uphold God's reputation. He asked, how could I do something like this against God? In other words, two consenting adults doesn't mean squat if God doesn't consent. We have two fundamental obligations. Love and serve God, love and serve people. And notice how these two things come into play in Joseph's reasoning. This is a violation against God. It's a violation against people. So it's got to be off the list. Moral codes are not set by a poll or even by whether or not anybody agrees with them in some sort of human judgment, like nobody gets hurt. Moral code is established in heaven. The irony, it's Mrs. Potiphar who is enslaved, trapped by whatever motivations she may have had. And it's Joseph, the slave, who's free. So Joseph runs. Mrs. Potiphar grabs his coat as evidence. You ever notice this guy can't keep track of his coat? It's a reoccurring problem. He loses his coat, but he keeps his character. And that's a whole lot more important. So, God swoops in, frees Joseph, lets him go home, right? Nope. He goes to prison. A sobering reminder that a life of integrity does not necessarily guarantee an exemption from suffering. In fact, the story may reaffirm that living a life of integrity pretty much assures that there's going to be some conflict, some suffering, some challenge that comes along the way. It's inevitable because we live in a broken world. But isn't that what Jesus affirmed anyway? In Matthew, the 10th chapter, he says, "And who does not take up his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who finds his life will lose it, and he who loses his life for my sake will find it." In the book of Job, God and Satan are having this sort of cosmic debate over whether people ultimately will honor God because he gives them lots of goodies or because he's good. Satan says, "You let me touch Job, and I'll prove that he's not the man of character that you think he is." God says, "Game on." You know the story. Job loses his health, his family, his livelihood, his wealth, and during the episode, God and Satan meet up again. Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is none like him on the earth, and a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil." And by the way, God does not dismiss ability to choose from Job in this case. Consider the risk that God has taken by taking that stance with Satan. Still, he holds fast to his integrity. "And although you incited me against him to destroy him without a cause," and still he holds fast to his integrity. God says, "He lost it all." I mean, his mortal life is in shambles now. And yet, the one thing he didn't lose was his integrity. And therefore, he didn't lose a relationship with me. Joseph lost his coat, but he didn't lose his connection to God. Changing the context for Job didn't change the man. Again, changing the context for Job didn't destroy his character. It revealed it, and it glorified God. We make choices each day. Really, we make choices minute by minute. Choosing what we're going to think on, what we're going to say, what we're going to do, who we're going to be associated with, where we're going to go, where we're not going to go. Choosing what we're going to support, what we're going to find fault with or try to defend. Choosing who we will glorify. Job and Joseph made a choice to not trade it away. We choose what we keep and what we're willing to lose. We determine what we're not willing to lose to some degree on the basis of how we define the win. You've seen this guy before. Tiger Woods, probably the most famous golfer. Many would say the most talented golfer to ever play the game. And you'll also remember that a few years ago, some revelations came to light, which confirmed some serious character flaws that Tiger needed to work on. We've all heard the stories. After his return to the game of golf, you remember he took some time off, and then he resurfaced. Nike put out an ad that was pretty brazen. "Winning takes care of everything." Really? It's a not so subtle message that we're a culture that doesn't care about ethics. We care about winning. Just win, and the endorsements will come back. Just win, and the fans will come back. Just win, and the status and the fame and the popularity will come back. Just win, the beautiful women will come back. Just win. again, how do we define the win? Here's another guy. Jeremy Effelt was a relief pitcher for the San Francisco Giants. He once got a paycheck, and there was some kind of clerical error that had happened. He got $500,000 more than he was supposed to get. Can you imagine that, getting a check? It's a cool $500,000 more than you were supposed to get. Three different legal experts told Jeremy, you can keep the money, they messed up, it's your gain. There's nothing that the Giants can do about this. You're free to pocket the extra dough. Jeremy had a different view. He noted the difference between legal and right. Jeremy professes to follow the Lord, and he says out of that conviction, he gave the money back. He was asked why, and he says two reasons. It wasn't mine. It wouldn't be right. Secondly, if I kept it, I couldn't sleep at night. Jeremy knew that he may have been free legally to keep the extra money. But he also knew that he would imprison his soul if he did it. So which guy is the real winner? You make the choices on what you're willing to lose by how we define the win. Joseph was willing to lose his freedom, his reputation, his position, his well-being, before he loses integrity. For Joseph, the win was to live your life in such a way that you don't lose your relationship with God. Here's the way Jesus explains it. For what profit is it to a man who gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? Jesus is challenging us to define the win. Joseph shows us that our God is not our God anywhere if he's not our God everywhere. And when we make that decision for God time and again, there's an impact on those around us, a blessing, especially to those who know us and rely on us the most. Proverbs 20 and verse 7. I think I got out of whack here. Not real sure what happened. There we go. The righteous man walks in his integrity. His children are blessed after him. There's no crisis that can take our character. The real crisis is when we choose to give it away. I want to remind us, too, that it's easy to pinpoint the times when we say no to something that is obviously wrong. As we mature day by day in the Lord, the question then is, how do we leverage that stronger integrity, sense of character, into things we should do? Maybe it's a difficult conversation. Maybe it's taking care of somebody who needs to be taken care of. Maybe it's taking that risk and stepping into the life of somebody else at potential personal embarrassment. I am convinced that Joseph didn't just have a don't do list. He had a big to-do list. And that was the essence of the reputation that he was able to establish. I think the same thing exists for us. And the challenge is, how do I continue to grow in a way where I develop spiritual muscle of integrity that I can use to benefit God and other people? With confidence that at the end of that game, God will indeed be glorified. How is it with us today? How would you rate your character, your consistency? It's a tough one. We can't fix it alone. With God, without the sacrifice of Jesus, our character is just kind of here today, gone tomorrow. We have to first deal with the ultimate and universal character flaw, that of sin. If you have not responded to the gospel of Jesus Christ, we offer you the invitation to do that, or perhaps you have other needs that need to be addressed today and you desire the prayers of the church in doing that. Under either way, we have the opportunity as followers of Jesus to return to the one who can strengthen our character like nobody else. And we should afford ourselves of that opportunity. We offer the invitation as we stand and sing.